Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. President Barack Obama has successfully won a second term in the 2012 presidential election. Despite the cynical efforts of his Republican rival Mitt Romney, President Obama won both the Electoral College and popular vote. And despite voter suppression efforts in Florida, Ohio, and other places around the country, Americans of all stripes turned out to the polls in a big way, giving President Obama a historical win. This morning, I have two wonderful and capable guests to help me go inside the 2012 presidential election. Get ready, folks. This is going to be a great show here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Joining me via telephone from Fanwood, New Jersey, is my friend and mentor, Myra Thomas. Myra Thomas is a regular contributor and writer for Secured Lender Magazine, President and CEO Magazine, and eFinancialCareers.com. She previously served as regional editor for the New Jersey newspaper, NJBiz, and online content editor for the business news website, NJBiz.com. Myra was a managing editor of FSO Magazine, a financial services publication. Currently, Myra is a freelance editor, writer, and columnist, having contributed hundreds of articles to leading and award-winning online and print publications. Myra received awards from the Working Press Association and the New Jersey Press Association, in addition to a fellowship from the National Conference of Editorial Writers and the Society for Environmental Journalists. In addition to her reporting work, Myra is a sought-after radio and business conference guest. Also joining me this morning via telephone is Colette Forrest, a campaign strategist and consultant. Ms. Forrest worked as a paid staffer for North Carolina U.S. Senator John Edwards, worked on the paid campaign staff of North Carolina U.S. Congressman Mel Watt, North Carolina U.S. Senate candidate Erskine Bowles, North Carolina District Court Judge Donnie Hoover, North Carolina Governor Beverly Perdue, and North Carolina Senator Kay Hagan. She also volunteered on the campaigns of South Carolina U.S. Congressman Jim Clyburn, the campaign of Mayor Anthony Fox, and a host of other elected officials in both North and South Carolina. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for asking me to be here.
Absolutely. Myra, I want to start with you. Hurricane Sandy has devastated, obviously, the Northeast, particularly the Jersey Shore. And I understand that a nor'easter swept through this week, bringing rain, snow, causing additional power outages. How are you faring, and how are New Jerseyans coping with the aftermath of these storms?
Well, being in the midst of New Jersey, I think that the biggest problem right now is just sort of the emotional toll that is taken on many of New Jerseyans, even the ones who haven't had, you know, such large damage as having their homes destroyed. People who, you know, have homes standing have trees in them, you know, roads have been obstructed, people have been without power. Many people are still without power in New Jersey, and so it's been very cold, and we've had this recent snowstorm, and that actually took out power lines again. So people who had power restored have subsequently lost their power again. So it's been difficult. Getting emergency relief to people on the Jersey Shore has been a challenge. And, you know, they're very concerned, obviously, about looting and any materials that might be left behind that are actually salvageable. So they recently had a time frame for residents along the most affected areas that were evacuated to come in and pick up as many pieces of belongings as they could. And, you know, certainly that wasn't ideal. But, you know, they really do have to control the situation in the areas because it's very dangerous. They're down power lines and, you know, literally the sand was pushed up into towns and destroyed towns.
Yeah.
So it's been very difficult, and now the situation is trying to figure out where will these people live permanently.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are people still in shelters because of the damage to their homes, and there are other people that are in shelters because they have no power, and it's been very cold. So the state is dealing with a tremendous problem. Plus, we have a number of utilities that service New Jersey, and one particular utility who shall remain nameless has done a very bad job of communicating their timeline of rollouts for turning on the power for people so people aren't even aware, you know, when maybe they might come back home if they're living with relatives. And so there's been a lot of miscommunication and problems with that. We actually have a number of out-of-state utilities coming in to help with, you know, repair poles and wires, et cetera. So it's been quite confusing in New Jersey.
Well, of course, Mari, you know, I'm from Asbury Park, New Jersey, right on the Jersey Shore. And I think, Colette, I did indicate that to you as well. So I feel your pain, although I am certainly enjoying 60-degree weather down here in Charlotte.
Well, we're hoping that, you know, things are supposed to get better. Weather's supposed to get better. So everybody's looking to sunnier days ahead.
Mari, there's been a big deal made out of Chris Christie's embrace, his effusive embrace of President Obama when Hurricane Sandy swept through. Any thoughts about how New Jersey is faring with regard to that political storm that kind of came through there with those two?
Well, you know, New Jersey is probably, for the most part, if you're New Jerseyans are dyed in the wool for the most part, pretty liberal state.
We've
always gone for the Democrat. And as far as Chris Christie, there's a love-hate relationship with him in the state, you know, mostly hate. And, you know, it's funny because everyone knows he speaks his mind. And he was very much on point, and he did a very good job of handling the crisis and was very compassionate to people, particularly on the Jersey Shore, who needed that sort of direct, forthright kind of communication in, you know, a very terrible time. And his embrace of Obama, you know, was certainly the right thing to do. I think that the conservatives, the Karl Roves of the world who have, you know, come to the fore to try to blame Christie for this last-minute surge that Obama benefited from, it's a bunch of, you know, malarkey. Because honestly, you know, I think that they're trying to look for some excuse that the candidate that they put up was just shabby, that they ran a really bad campaign, that even though they spent billions of dollars between Super PAC money, Sheldon Adelson money, billionaire money from all sorts of sources, you know, that they still couldn't win the election.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that to use Christie as a scapegoat is just pretty crappy. I mean, all around. He was the biggest advocate for Romney. He was probably the first governor of any major state to come out in support of Romney when, you know, everybody saw him as a pretty lackluster candidate. And he's done tireless stomping, you know, around the country for Romney. So if, you know, the idea that embrace of him was enough to do, you know, do Romney in, well, that's a pretty shabby excuse.
Now, Colette, I am certainly excited about having you back because last week we had a very interesting conversation about voter turnout and early voting in North Carolina. The president won handily in the Electoral College as well as defeated Romney with regard to the popular vote. Talk a little bit about the Obama campaign strategy to get out to vote and how it ties into local efforts here in Charlotte with regard to churches and organizations.
I mean, they did what they do well, which is the ground game.
Yeah.
They amped up registrants here in Mecklenburg County in Charlotte, North Carolina, and throughout the nation. He lost no traction with the African-American base, even though a lot of people thought that we had lost a lot of our enthusiasm. The numbers reflected otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
He retained the same percentage points, like in the 90 percentile, 93%, I think, to be exact, with African-Americans voting for him. And he got into double digits for the first time in presidential history with Hispanic voters. I mean, so he did his job. He kept his base, and he stayed competitive among white voters. He got right, I think, at 40% or a little bit under, and white women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so he did what he does well, which is connect to people and people are voters.
Right, right. Now, the president lost narrowly in North Carolina. How would you characterize the get out to vote effort here in North Carolina? The president won only 30 counties. Mitt Romney won 70 counties.
Right. We have 100 counties here in North Carolina. And when I looked at the numbers on Tuesday night, and Obama's numbers were pretty indicative of the Democratic gubernatorial nominee, Walter Dalton.
Right.
Here in North Carolina, we have an interesting parody of white Democrats that vote for Republicans. White Democrats split their ticket in North Carolina, as probably other states as well. But it's pretty well documented. You have white Democrats that split their tickets and vote for Republicans. So in Mecklenburg County, where McCrory has been mayor, he barely won Mecklenburg because Mecklenburg is a pretty Democratic county, whereas the other counties, when you look geographically at the map, where the counties are more rural and more easternly, they went for Romney. Where the counties are more urban and have a more diverse populace, they went for Obama.
Right.
And that's very similar county by county throughout the nation, in Pennsylvania and Virginia and Ohio. That's just how the numbers fall.
Yeah. Mm. Go ahead, Maya.
I think, you know, Colette has a great point. I think that the grassroots campaign that the Obama crew put together was really underestimated by the Romney folks, and that's why they lost. I mean, really, the Get Out to Vote effort was very strong. It was a very strong grassroots campaign. They ran it much like they did the first time around, which obviously they had much more money to do it this time. But, you know, it really relied on a lot of volunteers. There were people using cell phones, making calls on their own, you know, through a really complicated system that they used online. And they were really set up to you know, use technology, but then to play it into the grassroots campaign. They really got out the vote. They got people to the polls, you know. Meanwhile, the Republicans were completely off target, and they forgot that, you know, and they relied on the big thing that they did was they didn't disavow the maniacs in their party, you know, and I think that a lot of moderate Republicans came to the point, particularly women, you know, saw this, and they saw, you know, people talking about legitimate rape and, you know, telling women that they wouldn't have the right to abortion if they were raped or had a baby because of incest, you know, and they came out to vote. Women came out to vote in large numbers, and they voted against the Romney ticket because they were afraid of all the people that, you know, they had not disavowed. And every one of those politicians, by the way, went down, of all the people that made those maniac comments. I mean, they spent time worrying about conspiracy theories and trying to push them, you know, into the heads of, you know, their hardcore right-wing base, and completely forgot about, as Colette said, you know, the minority population, the large turnout of Hispanic voters, even larger than they voted in the past.
Well, Mara, here's the breakdown. President Obama received 93% of the black vote, 71% of the Latino vote, 67% of the unmarried women. And what was interesting, and I think everyone is talking about this, is that President Obama received 70% of the Asian vote. Where did that come from?
Well, I think that if you're looking at the Asian vote, particularly if you're looking at, you know, well-educated Asian Americans, I think that they were very afraid of some of the rhetoric that they were hearing in the Republican Party.
I
think that, for the most part, any right-thinking American would be. And so, you know, I think that there was a lot of scary talk, and I think that, you know, if you're a smart person and you sat down and you started to dissect some of the things that were behind the Romney campaign, and if you had to dig through some of his policy statements. I mean, this guy is proposing right to work, which means that basically, you know, people don't have a right to organize, you know, removal of the minimum wage and all sorts of things that are very scary to normal thinking people, you know.
I think also what we're hearing now with the national dialogue with the Republicans, because they're going to be pretty fractured for a while, is they are having difficulty in reconciling the fact that the America you want no longer exists.
Right.
So you need to just put away the Rockwell photos and paintings, because we are a far more browner, diverse society, and you've got to figure out your game plan and how you're going to authentically speak to those people. And I think that's where Obama is so phenomenally successful, be it Asian, Hispanic, single mothers, single women. He authentically talks to us because he really gets it.
Now, Colette, you did indicate that there are some folks who have expressed some vitriol with regard to President Obama's win this week. Some folks are very, very angry that he won. Talk a little bit about your experiences this week.
Well, I know yesterday when I was talking to my friend girl, some are in corporate America, some are entrepreneurs, and they already had their appointments set and their meetings on the books. And every appointment that they had with a majority individual, it was very huffed and very hurried, because it was as if they didn't even want to be entertained. Where the white folks, they just wanted it to be done with and out of there. And it's interesting because if we go back to 2000, when we clearly felt as minorities that we had the election hijacked from us, and then we had it to be judicially hijacked again with the Supreme Court ruling, we were very disappointed. We were very disillusioned. But at the end of the day, we knew that we accepted the facts and we moved on. I don't think that any of us have seen so much level of hate as we've seen since Obama was elected.
Right,
and it just baffles my mind, especially because Christianity is such a large part of the Tea Party and the Republican Party. So it's ironic that you guys are acting like heathens. You know, you love the Lord, but only when it is with people that look like you. So it boggles my mind. It's comical to me, but they're mad. You are absolutely right. They are upset and angry. I was talking to someone, and I said, when you enter into any contest, any race, any competition, be it sports or be it academic, you're going to have a top placer or winner, and you're going to have second place or loser.
Yeah.
So for Romney not to have even recognized, forget about his reconciliation, recognize there's a possibility that I may lose, not even have a consolation, a defeat speech. It was just amazing to me.
Right.
It was amazing. And then the role to be with the antics of, wait a minute, what do you mean, Ohio? How are you calling Ohio? Ohio can't be called. And at the end of the day, the precincts, like the strategists analyzed, the precincts that were remaining were so Democratic, there's no way that Romney could overcome what had already been got by Obama in the state. So they're interesting to me.
I think the Karl Rove machine behind the scenes was trying to figure out how they were going to possibly contest the Ohio election in court. And that's why they were holding it up. I mean, Romney was originally scheduled to come out and give his concession speech, and they actually put it on hold for a little while. People were sort of dangling, wondering, you know, what the heck is going on, you know? But you're right. There's been a level of vitriol and hate and racism that was very apparent throughout the election. And, you know, certainly there's a lot of sour grapes now. There's nothing funnier than listening to Fox News after Obama won, you know. And they're clutching at straws. And so, you know, the big thing was now trying to figure out how to blame the fact that the election was stolen and that there was some sort of jerry-rigging of the system and that there was voter fraud. Well, you know, if you want to get down to it and pull it out, the voter fraud occurred on the part of, you know, the Florida governor who restricted early voting hours
for
polling places that had the doors slammed shut in front of people's faces when they were supposed to be open. And these are largely Democratic districts with, you know, you can see the line and faces of, you know, brown and black people standing in these lines. So if you want to talk about voter fraud, but the recurrent image on Fox News last night and today was a picture of one lone black man who claimed to be a member of the new Black Panther Party. One lone black man standing in front of the polling place, supposedly looking very menacing. He just looked kind of cold to me. And he was standing outside, and this has been the recurrent image that Fox News has been putting up when I guess, you know, he's the boogeyman and we should be afraid of him. And obviously he was out there scaring people. I have no idea. But this is all that Fox News has a clutch on. And they think that, oh yeah, we're going to tell our, you know, our viewers that, you know, somehow this election was stolen from us because there's no way it could have been won outright.
Well,
like I said, going back to the 2000 election when we felt like that, you got to get over it. At the end of the day, we had to get over it. George Bush was our president. We had to get over it, and we had to move on. And I think that's where they are. They're just stuck. They can't move on. They are stuck in a gear, and they can't shift. And I don't know how long they're going to be like that. but God bless us.
Well, my concern, Mara, is obviously voter suppression. We've seen the long lines, and it is absolutely atrocious. But several states, including North Carolina, picked up Republican governors. We've already seen what Republican ideologues are doing with regard to holding the reins of state power and to suppress the vote. Do you anticipate there being more efforts to suppress the vote now that their ranks are swelling in terms of state governorship?
Yeah, I'm hoping. I believe it will be, because unfortunately, you know, the way that elections work, as you well know, is that, you know, the states have control over it. I mean, there was one district, I forget which one in the country, that had a 10-page ballot. Who in the heck has time to read a 10-page ballot?
That was Florida.
That was Florida.
That was one district in Florida.
Florida had the, and it might have been designed because they've got a Republican governor, and they've got a Republicanly controlled legislature.
Yeah, they've manipulated
it. It's not accidental.
Yeah, it's not accidental. They've manipulated the vote so much that they make sure that they get all these questions and unrelated, you know, items on the ballot, so that, you know, they try to get out as much and extreme things, you know, so they get out as much of the conservative vote as they can to try to, you know, to get the numbers skewed. But I really think what this speaks to is that there has to be some force, hopefully, you know, some Democratic force, or just some forward-thinking, you know, a coalition of moderate conservatives and Democrats who come together and realize that if we say that we're a democracy, we need to act that way.
Well,
and you need to have a consistent voting policy, and there should be a federal elections board that oversees the way that elections are held. We've had polling places continuously, people say at polling places that they had machines that were broken, that they marked things, and they thought for sure it had gone for the other candidate. You know, it's just a horrible process, and what we need is a federal election day,
well,
you know, a holiday, a national holiday, like many countries do, that will guarantee, particularly poor people who can't get off from work, will have a chance to come vote.
Absolutely, I agree. Unfortunately, the Republicans maintain control of the House, while the Democrats are maintaining control of the Senate. This appears to be a recipe for more gridlock. How could we request or desire what you've articulated if we can't even get these folks to move in Congress?
But now, you know, I have to weigh in because I have to give my grandmother credit for making me recognize that God's hand is always in it. I don't think it's a recipe for gridlock as much as I think it's a recipe for grow up. You have to recognize you've got to get along.
Yeah,
we only have one planet, and this is our country, not white, not black, but all Americans. And so I think that what we have is a balance of power. We've got a Democratic president. We do have some Republican governors now. But if we recall not too long ago, I think it was in Texas, where the governor was being adamant and saying, I'm not going to take any of President Obama's aid, and he had to rescind and he had to take it because the state needed it. I think you're going to see more of people recognizing, I got to get over my issue. I've got to work with a Republican. I've got to work with the Democrat, because you're not going to go forward or make any progress for your constituents if you don't.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that they also will realize it, because the Republican Party is sitting around right now, the powers that be, realizing that they screwed up. And they've screwed up for a while now, and they've lost, you know, certain seats. And they're going to realize that they have to figure out how to change the game plan. And people are angry.
Right.
Absolutely. We have just about a couple of minutes left in the show. I did want to give you, Colette, an opportunity to address the Court of Appeals. Cressy Thigpen lost to Chris Dillon, and Wanda Bryant won her seat over Marty McGee. Any thoughts on the impact of the Court of Appeals?
Well, the Court of Appeals is the court that hears all your briefs and all the arguments that are needed to set precedent in the state. Now, in putting things in judicial context, now, Cressy Thigpen, he'd lost before. So he still had never proven himself as an electable judge statewide. He was appointed to the bench by Governor Perdue.
Right.
And he's a wonderful guy, but he's very laid back. And that just doesn't fit campaign style 2012. You've got to engage the voter. You've got to connect with the voter. I've got to have a reason to go down to the ballot, the bottom of the ballot, and vote for somebody that I can't pick up with a straight party voting. And Cressy, unfortunately, could not convey that to the voters the two times that he ran statewide.
Right.
So he's never been elected statewide when the voters have voted upon him. I think he's a great guy, but I think that maybe if he chooses to re-enter into politics, he's got to change his campaign style.
Okay.
And be able to connect with the voters. I mean, but I think that the Court of Appeals will continue to be serviced by Wanda Bryant and Linda McGee, who also won. And that was an interesting, I must say, that was an interesting part on the Republican Party, because Linda McGee is a Democrat and Wanda Bryant is a Democrat and Wanda Bryant is an African-American. And the Republican Party found somebody that was last name McGee to run against Bryant. So there might be some sort of confusion. But like with the Rove tactics, I think people are getting that you've got to keep it honest. God doesn't like ugly.
Yeah.
It will be reconciled if you try to do some tricky-dicky type of antics, because it's just not going to be victorious.
Absolutely. Myra, we have just about 30 seconds left. There appears to have been a huge repudiation of big money in this election. Neither the Koch brothers or Sheldon Adelson could buy this election. The millions spent by the Koch brothers seems to have gone to waste. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Yeah. I mean, prior to the actual election, I was very depressed about the shape of things to come, and Citizens United really kind of did me in. But to think that that much amount of money was poured into the campaign, and yet it could not turn the election, even with Obama still living with the nightmare of the economy, still not in the greatest situation. That factor, and the factor of big money from all the super PACs and all the Sheldon Adelsons and Harold Simmons of the world, still could not change the results of this election. And I think that they'll have to, you know, reassess their game plan. Let's hope that it doesn't come that it turns into just pouring more money and more money. I don't think it will. I think that they're going to have to reassess their ground game, and the Republicans are going to have to come to the point where they realize that they've ignored a large percentage of the population and that they've played to the fringe. And, you know, I'm not just talking about ignoring minorities. I'm talking about ignoring the more moderate Republicans in their midst, and they're going to lose them. And they've lost them. They lost them on some of the Obama votes.
And certainly
on some of the local elections in the state and House, because there were tons of people that voted against, you know, Todd Akin. There were tons of people who were Republicans that walked in and voted against Richard Murdoch. So, you know, they really, really, really need to figure out how they're going to bring those moderate Republicans. Like the Jack Kemps of the world, and everybody remembers how they're going to bring those
people to the fore of
their party, people who were stand-up men who were willing to have a sit-down with the other side, you know? And I think that this has got to be the turning point.
Absolutely. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me this morning to talk about this very, very important election. I'll talk with you soon. Thanks.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I'd like to again thank Myra Thomas and Colette Forrest for joining me this morning to talk about the outcome of the 2012 presidential election. It behooves us all to remember that although the president was victorious, as a nation, we have a long way to go in restoring our fiscal and economic health. The road to a more perfect union, though tough and riddled with pitfalls, obstacles, restarts, and indeed triumphs, is a journey well worth taking. We all have to be more engaged, because President Obama can't do it alone. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.